south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Hey, now, here's another case of that can only happen in Latin America. An expat gringo friend of mine works at one of those helicopter schools. He's been there some years now, teaches English. His Spanish sucks, but it doesn't matter, you know? They just want you to speak English. Anyway, he's a dog lover. I have a couple dogs, too. Always liked dogs, always had dogs. And it turns out, you know, he bought some land, built himself a little house, and decided he wanted to have some dogs. Lived in an apartment for many years down here, but he wanted to get out in the wide open spaces. Moved out to the burbs and such. Used to live in a big, crazy Latin city, but he saw the light. Now he's living the life of Riley on about a half an acre with every kind of fruit tree known to man growing on it. Oh, and by the way, I got to mention, he's got $1 million view, too. If I recall, I think he paid around 9 or 10 G's for the lot. Anyway, he just happened to mention to his kids, remember, I said he's an English teacher at one of those helicopter schools, so practically every one of the kids at that school have parents who are wealthy, even by first world standards. Some of them excessively wealthy. Hey, we don't call them helicopter schools for nothing. Yep, they have helicopter pads, and some kids actually arrive by helicopter. Meaning, of course, most of the kids are living in a fake, unrealistic bubble world too, but that's another story. Anyway, he just happened to mention to one of his classes that he was looking to get a dog and didn't know quite which kind to get. Next thing you know, he gets a call from one of the mothers of one of those kids whose hobby is showing Rhodesian Ridgebacks at dog shows throughout Latin America. And she offered him a pair of puppies, male and female. In Spanish, macho y hembra. So that was maybe 2 years ago. By the way, show dogs like that are worth a couple of grand. Fact is, I know a bit about dogs myself, and I never even heard of a Rhodesian Ridgeback. Have you? Probably not, because they're pretty rare. In time, I found out by visiting my friend, they are big and smart and around 100 pounds of pure muscle, and they love to jump up on you and destroy your clothes. The gringo owner's fault, of course, not theirs. Well, soon enough, his puppies had puppies, and he couldn't bear to part with them. Naturally, when the second generation of puppies grew up to adult size, there were dog fights, and just a week ago, I checked in with them, and I saw the guy had a big bandage on his left arm. I said, hey, what happened? He said, oh, I had something like 20 stitches in my arm. He said it happened while his two male dogs were fighting it out for dominance. They really went at it, and as he was breaking it up, he got caught in the tussle. Result, 20 stitches for him. Man, that must have hurt. Then he said, yeah, I took the dog to the vet, and man, there was a big chunk of meat missing from his shoulder. He said it was so bad I could see the nerves in the artery. He said the vet had to knock him out to put him back together again, and now he's okay. Then, surprise, surprise, he said the vet looked at his arm. He was gashed wide open and bleeding, too. And she said, get over here, and she stitched me up, too. Then, she even gave me some antibiotics and a tetanus shot. He said, yeah, that's my full-service vet. We both laughed, and he said, you know, if that had happened up in the States, she'd have lost her license for sure and got drummed out of the profession. Then get this, he said, she gave me some animal antibiotics. I said, wait a minute, aren't these for dogs and horses and such? And she said, antibiotics are antibiotics. Just look at the product information sheet. And she gave me one. It was in Spanish, and my Spanish sucks, so I took her word for it. She said, look, and pointed to the Abbott's laboratory symbol, same company that makes antibiotics for humans. In fact, she said, you'd be surprised to know they come off the same line, they have the same purity, same quality control, only they're something like 5 times cheaper than the human brand. He said, you know, I couldn't believe it. She knocked my dog out, stitched them all up, stitched me up, gave me antibiotics, gave the dog antibiotics, and it was around $100 for the whole thing. Then he told me, I still can't get over the fact I was eating doggy antibiotics for a whole week. That's when I said, hey, look, I can show you a couple websites. They're prepper websites up in the States, and they promote and stock survival stuff they say you should stock up on. That's what prepping is all about, right? They're waiting for the big one to hit. And I said, So they have a list of first aid stuff, antibiotics, and other drugs you should stock up on, they say. Now, it's obvious. You can't go to your MD up in the States and say, hey, doc, I'm a prepper. Can you write me a script for 1,000 hits of 500 milligram PenVK or tetracycline or erythromycin? You know, just to have in the concrete bunker for a rainy day. Well, your doc's likely to think you're nuts or give you the deer in the headlight look. So that approach won't work, and preppers know it. But survivalists are very creative. Those particular sites will tell you to order your long-term bunker survival drugs from pet supply outfits. And I told my friend, you could look up those well-known survival sites on the net and see they say the very same thing your vet friend said. As far as antibiotics and some other drugs, the doggy, elephant, hippo, and even fish formulations come from the same manufacturers and off the same production lines as the human varieties, only they have different sizes, names, and product numbers. Then he gave me a look and said, and that's supposed to make me feel better, right? And I said, hey, it's working for you, right? And he said, yeah, seems like, so far anyway. By the way, you know, you don't need a prescription at all for most any medicines you see at pharmacies here in Latin America. Hey, now, wouldn't that be a boon to preppers up in the States? Hey, I know what you're thinking. It's been tried. If you get caught, well, let's just say you don't want to spend time in a jail on either side of the border. Though it'd be a great business opportunity, it's best not to even think about it. All right, speaking of emails to yours truly, I get a lot of them. But we weren't speaking about them, were we? Well, we will now. Here's an interesting one. He says, hi, Johnny. I've been listening to your show for some time now, and me and my partner are working on our Plan B. I absolutely love this show. You provide a perfect mix of solid information along with raw humor, so thank you for what you do. Now, my question involves what I heard you talk about a few weeks ago regarding the fellows who attended your seminar and you took them for dinner, which involved a restaurant with a cartel dining experience. Me, Johnny here. Yeah, I got a few emails when I told that story. Seems like people are truly amazed that you could go to a restaurant or a mall or, you know, to the races, whatever, and see a couple of drug cartel guys sitting there with their extraordinarily endowed retardation-like bimbos. Hey, it's not that it happens all the time down here, but when it does, people don't do much. It's business as usual. The management certainly doesn't mind well-behaved narcos and their entourages. Hell, they order big and they tip handsomely. And believe me, you don't hear Latin ladies say to their husbands or boyfriends, Julio, I'm not eating in a place that serves narcos. Let's get out of here. I mean, come on. Narcos have to eat too, right? Yep, in Latin America, you'll find narcos and scumbag thieving politicians dining with the riffraff all the time. I mean, come on. Who's the bigger jerk? Who's the larger menace to society? I'd say the politician. Wouldn't you? Because he's living like a prince and picking your pocket 24/7 and you got no say about it. At least the narco sells the product and he's not forcing anyone to buy it. Now, as hard as it may be to accept that premise, you can look at it like one smart expat laid it out to me some time ago. He said, look, Johnny, nearly all the modern wars in the world were started by politicians and millions have died. And narcos have their wars too, but it's always narco against narco. And the regular working people will only be casualties if they live in the hood and get caught in the crossfire. I know, you get the point. But back to the email. Anyway, he says, I heard the show when you were in a restaurant, and you happened to witness a cartel dining experience. I like the way he put that. Then he says, as for me and my partner, our intention is to find property in southern Baja California. You know, that's the Mexican peninsula that juts down below California. By the way, the word Baja is so self-explanatory. It means below or under, thus under California. Anyway, he says they selected Baja California primarily because of water sports. He says because of a sleepy seaside village they know of. So he says, when I traveled there 4 years ago, I had an amazing vacation. I felt very safe with the exception of one incident where I felt like I needed to keep my head down and just keep walking. Now, this area I'm talking about is close to an arroyo where many tourists set up their RVs free on the beach all winter. Now remember, I'm talking about 4 years ago. Now let's fast forward several years. A body was found in that same arroyo, but there was very little other information about that incident. Now just last month up in central Baja, three off-duty police officers were ambushed on the highway. One was shot dead and two ended up in the hospital. Not only that, the paramedics are frightened to help these days due to reprisals. Some of the forums and blogs that I follow say that the drug cartels are making their way into Baja, which up until recently was unheard of. Seems like there's a power vacuum in the area because some high-profile cartel types were recently arrested. Johnny, in that past show, you talk about how life is safe in Latin America as long as you stay in the developed areas that expats hang out at. I'm wondering what that means because I've always felt that an authentic travel experience involves mixing with locals, not foreigners. My partner is fluent in Spanish, so it would be a shame not to utilize her ability to communicate easy with the locals. My partner, however, is very concerned about safety and getting caught up in cartel wars. No one really expects to run into bad people on vacation or extortions or kidnappings and such. But it does happen, especially when we heard about the Canadian woman who was killed in Belize a few weeks ago. So we were wondering your thoughts on all this. I do love Mexico and its people and like to make my plan B there, but I don't want to put my gal in danger either. Wondering your thoughts on that. Keep up the great shows. Mr. B from Canada. Well, Mr. B from Canada, thanks for the email, but it sounds like you haven't been listening to my shows very closely. Or maybe you've been listening to someone else's shows, because you know what? I recommend just the opposite of some of the things you've mentioned. Like, for example, I say keep off the gringo tourist trail as much as you can. Stay away from gringos. Live with the locals. Don't live in middle or lower middle class Latin America. That would be white trash to us. Live in the upper middle class Latin American areas. In the beautiful, wide open spaces of the burbs, where in a lot of cases it's like 1970s Minneapolis beamed somehow right down here to Latin America. You know, if you live in a densely populated, crappy area, there's going to be crime. If you live out in the burbs, in the wide open spaces, in a gated, guarded community, or even a lone homestead way out in the boonies, it can be as safe as Idaho. And about, you know, getting caught up in cartel wars, well, I've been down here 27 years now, at least 25 of them well off the gringo tourist trail, and I can tell you this, I know tons and tons of expat gringos, and not a single one that's ever been caught up in a narco war. However, I've heard a lot of secondhand stories about gringos and expats and tourists who have been affected secondarily by all that narco gangland shootout stuff. But always, and I mean always, as it turns out, are you ready for this? How about a drum roll? In Mexico. I know you found some great little sleepy village where you can do all your water sports and such. But man, there are a half dozen or so other Latin American countries with all that and more, and they're safer and less expensive too. So my advice, don't concentrate on Mexico. Don't just hang out there. Explore. Especially if your better half speaks Spanish. What are you waiting for? Go south of the border. My advice, bypass Mexico completely. I know, it's an easy hop, skip, and a jump from the States, and there are 1.5 million gringos hanging out there, so you're gonna find a lot of English-speaking friends. But you know, Mexico is tainted, it's a failed state, and the locals see you as dollar signs. By the way, you talk about that lady from Belize. Well, here's an article, and articles like this come out about every week. It says, six killed around the Mexico resort of Los Cabos. You know, that's one of the most touristy areas in Baja. Actually, in all of Mexico. Man, is it saturated with medium and upscale gringos. One telltale sign of the gringo invasion is the cruise ships going in and out every day. They've even got their own English language gringo newspapers. And as for real estate, forget about it. First world prices and then some all the way. It's even the home of Mexican timeshares. Oh man, I know people who've been sucked into that game and man, do they regret it. Anyway, let me read this article that came out last week. It says, six bodies have been found dumped on Thursday and Friday around the twin resorts of Cabo San Lucas and San Jose del Cabo on the southern tip of Baja California Peninsula, which has become the scene of increased violence in recent months. The bodies, it says, were gangland related. Men were found wrapped in plastic bags in a tarp in San Jose del Cabo, and bodies showed signs of torture. All right, you get the point. Now, about news articles like this. Sure, I'd read about that stuff off and on, but it was always in bad, terrible narco neighborhoods. But now, it's hitting the tourist spots in Mexico. Do you need any more reason to keep away from the place? Oh, and by the way, when you bring up the topic of that Canadian woman that was killed in Belize, the story's coming out now that it wasn't a simple botched robbery. It's much more complicated. She'd been receiving some threats. People pissed off about some kind of real estate deal gone bad. That's what seems to be coming out. And when they found her and her boyfriend, they still had their jewelry and a lot of money on them. The only thing missing, their cell phones, and the battery was taken out of their car, so they couldn't get away. Now, nobody knows the full story yet, but I can tell you this. Every once in a while, you hear about an American or European woman getting kidnapped, raped, even killed. Now, the odd thing is, at least half of the time, the victims are tall, often blonde, Northern European or Scandinavian backpacker types, young ladies traveling singly or in pairs on the very cheap. I've seen it myself quite a few times. Clueless gringas and European lady backpackers doing stupid things. For example, hitchhiking, often walking aimlessly down scruffy neighborhood roads. And sometimes, you know, I'm driving way out in the boonies, in the middle of nowhere, and suddenly I'll see a tall, blue-eyed blonde or two in shorts and tank tops, which is not an appropriate dress code in the land of macho men. They'll either be walking along, hitchhiking, or taking a breather from their extraordinarily big-ass backpacks. Now, I'm not saying they're asking for trouble, but, you know, it's a stupid thing to do. And I'll tell you, plenty of times I've been in a big, bustling Latin city off the Gringo Tourist Trail, generally near the Central Park and the historic buildings, and I'll see one or maybe two blonde, blue-eyed, very tall backpackers standing on a corner looking on a map or at their iPhone in a virtual sea of short, brown people. So yeah, I've witnessed situations like that. And 99 times out of 100, they're perfectly safe, especially during the day. But man, coming out of a bar late at night after some heavy partying, a lone tall blonde European girl or a pair of them, walking down the street to their 10 buck a night backpacker flea bag hotel some blocks away. You know, that happens 1,000 times a night everywhere in Latin America. And yet, months and months, even years go by and nothing happens. You don't hear about anything in the papers or in the media. Then there's a case like this Canadian lady, and it's all over the first world press. Scares the hell out of everybody up north, and hey, that's okay. But I'm here to tell you, the media just loves stories like that. You know, if it bleeds, it leads and all that. But you can see the problem. You have to be halfway smart. Hey, I saw women get their purse cut right out from under them in Florence and Rome, Italy. It's all about situational awareness, you know, wherever you are. In fact, like Expat Eddie says, and he's been down here, 15 or 20 years now, he says, a person, gringo or otherwise, has about 100 times greater chance of getting killed or injured by just driving a car as opposed to walking down the street here in Latin America, no matter where you are. And you know what? He's right. And you know, to get a good feel for all this, all you have to do is turn on the 6 o'clock news and any Latin city down here, you know, one of the local stations, car crash after car crash, buses flipping, rolling down embankments. Every night a substantial death toll due to out-of-control drivers and vehicles. Whether it's drunk drivers, Volkswagen-sized potholes, slick roads with no streetlights or signage, people driving too fast for conditions, overloaded vehicles, passing on curves, which seems to be a Latin pastime. Then, along with traffic accidents on that very same TV broadcast, they'll show a dead guy in the road with a police barricade around him. Maybe a car with multiple bullet holes in it. And you'll find nearly every single time those kind of violent deaths are in neighborhoods you and I would never want to go in. And if you've done your basic homework about the Latin cities you're visiting, you'll have a nice little list of the districts and subdivisions that are good, bad, ugly, and great. Now, in the case of this Canadian lady that got killed in Belize, the town she was living in, and she'd been going back and forth there for 5 years, had its own little gringoized community of around 300 people. And so far, as this story plays out, it looks like she'd made some enemies within her own gringo community. In time, we'll get the full story. But anyway, it's always unwise to walk around like an entitled first world wealthy gringo. iPhone in hand, Rolex, bling, gold tooth grill. Yeah, my advice to you senior citizens who can't run too fast or are in wheelchairs, lose the gold tooth grills before you come down. Can you do that? And skip the designer and real Land's End safari clothes. And real leather luggage? Nah. And you know, people ask me all the time, how should I dress when I'm in Latin America, just kind of exploring around? I say, dress like a ninth grade geography teacher on vacation. Clean, but slightly rumpled. And how about this email that I'll have to edit a little bit for our younger listeners? Hey, Johnny, love your show. They always say that, don't they? If they started out saying, I hate your show, then I wouldn't read it, right? Oh, yes, I would. Okay, he says, well, Johnny, here's my question for you. I'm 53 years old and will be able to draw my full pension on February 2019. I'm one of those worthless state employee types, South Carolina. Well, I actually work in the field, not writing a desk, so maybe I'm not that worthless. Yep, that's what I keep telling myself anyway. I've been considering retiring outside the U.S. for quite some time now, and I'm wondering, could I start the pensionado paperwork with the immigration attorneys before my retirement date, even though I'm not currently drawing my pension yet? I can prove that I have a pension and my date of retirement from the state. I would certainly like to have this completed before I do retire so I know what my options are. All right, it's me, Johnny. I'll try to answer that for you. Well, it's all about the dates because the paperwork that you submit for residency, whether it's temporary, permanent, or pensionado residency, all of the paperwork you submit, including the good conduct so-called police report, call it a rap sheet if you want, if you got a record. Now, when you finally submit that certified and authenticated paperwork to the Latin government of your choice, from that moment back to the date you originally got the document, it can't be more than 6 months. So if you have a police report or a pension statement that's one day over 6 months old, they won't accept it and you'll have to get another one. You'll have to start all over again. Now, you know, under certain conditions, you can go straight to permanent residency. That is, skip temporary residency and the legal costs to get that started. Plus, that'll save you 2 years on your way to getting a passport. All you have to do is prove you have a certain minimum monthly income coming in. It's coming from an outside country, and it's permanent. Of course, a pension or a social security check are the obvious ones there. However, money from trusts or annuities will also fit the bill. Even recurrent rents if you're a landlord. So you could have a rental property up in the States that's putting out, let's say, $1,200 a month. That'll work and it will qualify you for permanent residency. And then after 5 years or so, you can go straight to a passport and nationality in the Latin country of your choice. Anyway, in this case, from the emailer Mr. R, I can't say that it would really help or speed things up to get the paperwork ready and send it in before you actually receive the pension. Though perhaps because residency programs are changing so fast and getting tougher, a lot more hoops to jump through, I'd consider, Mr. R, in your case, since you're not going to get your pension until February 2019, which is a couple years away, if I were you, I might not wait. I'd try for the temporary residency right now. You don't need any proof of income to do that, you know? And sure, depending on the Latin country you decide on, it could cost you anywhere from $750 to $2,000. But if you do it now, you'll be all locked in and your paperwork will be in the system. So to see if that's worth it, you'll have to talk it over with your Latin immigration lawyer. Now, in the next part of Mr. R's email, he tells us about some of his background. So as a somewhat typical case, see how it stacks up against your own situation. He's divorced and single. He's been that way for years and intends on staying single now. That's what they all say. Then he says, my Spanish skills are somewhat backpacker slash gringo on the tourist trail in Central America type. He says, I don't own a home in the States and I'm only looking to rent wherever I end up. Smart move, Mr. R. Then he says, I own a 2015 Toyota Corolla, one of those plain Jane types. I consider driving it down, but I may not if it's too big of a hassle. He says, I can use chicken buses if I need to. Well, Mr. R, you're right. You should sell the Corolla. Don't drive it down. And no, Mr. R, you're not a carefree 20-something backpacker anymore. You shouldn't be using chicken buses, even if you think you need to. Mr. R, sell that plain Jane Toyota and buy another plain Janer when you get down. Now, this is interesting. He says, since 2004, I've been to 51 countries and territories. I've visited every Central American country from Panama to Mexico, some several times. Guatemala and Mexico many times for sure. He says, I have no debt, but I have a bit of silver bullion I'm going to need to move one way or another without attracting attention, of course. Now, it's nothing iffy or illegal or anything like that. It's just that traveling with a heavy, bulky load can attract attention. Well, Mr. R, I'd say sell it and rebuy it when you get down here. If it was gold, that'd be a different story because gold is much lighter and easier to transport. By the way, you could go down to a pawn shop in the States, right, where you are, and switch it over to gold. Though I'm sure you know silver is in a very depressed market now and has a hell of an upside compared to gold. I like gold, but I'm much more in favor of silver, but it's so damn bulky. Now to the most unusual part of his email. He says, Johnny, I've considered going to one of your seminars, but frankly, it may not do me a lot of good since I'm not trying to work once I get to where I'm going. I've worked enough. Maybe the seminar could be revised to look like the following for people like me. Just some suggestions, Johnny. He says, number one, forget all the factories, business contacts, fancy gated communities, and all that jazz. Let's just do like the following. Day one, keep an extensive hour-by-hour diary of everything that happens at the seminar, starting with sussing out gringo, expat, and local bars and discos. Day one would include, but is not limited to, introduction to safely consuming flaming and coconut drinks while relaxing at your favorite beach bar. Day two, if your hangover permits, lessons in learning how to talk to the locals, how to impress and ultimately embarrass know-it-all gringos who hardly know you, and how to successfully chat and mingle with expats and locals without letting on you're a totally clueless idiot green gringo who just arrived. Day three, if hangovers permit, going to and doing things that are totally illegal up in the States, but perfectly legal in Latin America. Johnny, that takes in a lot of territory and possibly could mean that day four's lecture could take place in a jail cell. The subject, how to overstay your 90-day visa perpetually without being deported or fined, including going over the range of minimally accepted bribes depending on which official you happen to be dealing with. All right, Johnny, all kidding aside, who knows, I might still attend one of your seminars. I've certainly got $3,000 worth of laughs out of your podcast. Do keep up the good work, Mr. R. Well, thanks for that, Mr. R. But wait a minute, you said you've visited 51 countries since 2004? Man, you need your own radio show. Wait a minute, vacationing to 51 Latin countries on a government paycheck? And to think they told me in Sunday school that life was fair. So what do you think about Mr. R's seminar suggestions? Speaking of seminars, my upcoming July 2017 Expat Insider Seminar kicks off in about a month. You still have time to sign up. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's seminar link, and you're there. And you know, it takes anywhere from a day to a month to get your paperwork together if you plan on killing two birds with one stone. That is, apply for your Guatemalan residency when you're down for the seminar, so you can still get that going too. Oh, and don't forget about those famous John Galt pre and post seminar trips. They're filling up fast. You know, there's limited attendance there too. And for those of you who can't get boots on the ground right now, just can't make it down to the seminar, don't forget the next best thing is to sign up for my Expat Essentials course. That's www.expatplanb.com. Oh, and if you want to do a one-on-one phone or Skype consult with me, you can download my consultation and questionnaire page from the newexpat.com website too. If you're putting together your own Plan B, you should have a look at that form to see if you're on the right track. Do check it out.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.